This is the official Euro 2024 podcast.
Georgia have written history at their first Euro to reach the round of 16.
Georgia for a 2-0 lead. Georges Mikhaltadze. Oh, he's taken it! Mr. Goal Again Man strikes again!
An incredible victory over group winners Portugal means they progress, as do Turkey.
Meanwhile, it was also a glorious day for Slovakia and Romania. A draw in Frankfurt sent them both into the knockout stage.
Harin scores it and scores it brilliantly. The Romanian roll out. Dubravka did not have a chance.
Belgium also make it through on a thrilling final day.
So we'll look ahead to the last 16 as Germany face Denmark and Switzerland take on holders Italy. Hello and welcome to the Euro Show, where Chris, we've just seen the Georgia players celebrate something truly incredible.
Scenes and moments that will stay with them forever, and I would suggest have been written into Euro history as well. Their first major tournament ever. They only played football as an independent nation since 1990, and they have just all taken that picture, which will be on the front and back pages around the world in front of their adoring fans, and a banner at the top, which they've had in all three games, which spells out believe. My word, they've done that. And some of the emotion in the stands and on the players and on Willie Sanyol's face, quite remarkable that Georgia will grace the last 16. And meanwhile, we are currently seeing Hakan Çalhanoğlu lead a kind of impromptu team talk in the centre circle with all of the Turkey players around him. Smiles as wide as the Bosphorus, because they are also into the knockout stage and they're bouncing in the stands there too.
Yes, a 2-1 victory over Czechia sees them progress, and Georgia 2-0 winners over Portugal. Some night to join us to dissect it all is European football expert Andy Brassel. Andy, good evening.
Good evening.
Let's start with Georgia. What a story. What a story.
It's remarkable, and of course, when you look at the fact that they'd finished fourth in the qualifying group, that they qualified through the Nations League group, and then have got themselves through a very, very tough playoff, and did it with real personality, with real grit, and they lost that opening game against Turkey, playing some pretty exciting football along the way. I think that what's so impressive about them is they've used different methods to get themselves through this. So you think in the first game they tried to go toe-to-toe with Turkey, and they managed it for quite a bit of it. Then they really had to defend like tigers in the second half against Czechia to hold on to that point that people at the time, remember, thought was just an anecdotal point, you know, just their first point in a major competition. But it's turned out to be the building block on which they had this night of glory tonight.
The small matter of Spain next in the round of 16 for Georgia. Plenty more of that to come. And we can see the Turkey flags now being flown very proud as well. What an achievement for that group of players. Some great experience, but also, Andy, some incredible young talents who we're now going to see in the knockout stage of a Euro.
Yes, it really is, Chris. And having just come back from Germany, I think we can really feel the pressure that those Turkey players are under as well. I mean, you look at them celebrating now, it's just as if a little bit of that pressure has been released, because of course there are so many Turkish and fans of Turkish ancestry in Germany that it's been almost like three home games for them. You know, you think of all the teams at UEFA Euro 2020 who were sort of under that pressure of home games, or had that advantage of home games, depending on which way you look at it. And for them, I think it's been an enormously uplifting experience, but at times the expectation has been really tough, and I think we felt that after Czechia equalised tonight.
Yeah, when they were one goal away from going through themselves. Mm. Well, but it was always going to be dramatic, because we had five places still to be confirmed on the final night of the group stage. and it did not disappoint.
It didn't. A reminder, we're on every night of the competition just after the final match of the day finishes, and this show is a podcast too, and we want you in touch on X. Message us your thoughts on tonight's action at Euro 2024. So let's start in Group F. Portugal were already through as group winners, remember. A much changed side on the night, and they faced Georgia, who knew a win in Gelsenkirchen would see them through to the round of 16 too.
Georgia attacking, and it's Kvaratskhelia. First chance of the game, first goal of the game. Sensational start for Georgia. Kvicha Kvaratskhelia. Georgia for a 2-0 lead. Georges Mikhaltadze. Oh, he's taken it! Mr. Goal Again Man strikes again.
Yes, they have a regular goal scorer up front. They have superb support. And in Kvaratskhelia, they have an incredible player who stepped up on the night, Andy Brassel.
Yeah, he really did. And he'd, again, been someone who was under such incredible pressure to succeed in those first two games. The real genuine superstar, someone would say the first genuine superstar of Georgian football, especially having taken Napoli to the Serie A title in 2023, of course. But you get the impression, on the other hand, that positionally he has a little bit more liberty in the national team, because whereas he has to play on the left for Napoli, they've tried him inside a few times. And so maybe Georgia and their coach, Willy Sagnol, can thank Francesco Calzona, the coach of Slovakia, who's played him in these more central areas in the club game. And he's been getting in some really interesting spots. Now, of course, the other positive with Georgia and with Kvaratskhelia is the form of Georges Mikhaltadze, who's had an extraordinary season, real ups and downs in the club game, has come into this tournament in brilliant form, having done really well at his former club Metz in the second half of the season. And you're looking at Euro 2024's top scorer as stands.
Yeah, 3 goals. So he's one ahead of Nicolas Voorkroeg, Jamal Musiala, Cody Gakpo, Razvan Marin and Ivan Schrantz at the end of the group stage, Andy. At the other end of the pitch, we saw another very, very impressive performance from Georgia's goalkeeper. He undoubtedly has been one of their stars to reach the round of 16, hasn't he?
Yeah, as Mabadashvili is a keeper that has been performing at a very high standard for Valencia for quite a while now. Still only 23 years old. I mean, it's slightly reminiscent of the Gigi Donnarumma situation. You know, his reputation preceded him, and yet he's managed to meet that and just show what a fine player he is. And already you get the impression that you're looking at a goalkeeper who's 28, 29. It's remarkable that he's several years younger than what you would expect from his performances. He gives an enormous amount of confidence to his defence. And, you know, I think he's obviously such an adaptable goalkeeper, because when they need great saves, he can make great saves. But when they just need a steady hand, when they've got a bit more of a foothold in the game, his concentration is impeccable as well.
74th in the world rankings. They finished 4th in a qualifying group with, admittedly, a tough one with Spain, Scotland, who went through, Norway and Cyprus as well. But they went through that playoff system to get to the finals. And on the night for Portugal, Andy, they made wholesale changes. Ronaldo did start, but 8 alterations to the team that won the last game against Turkey probably wasn't a surprise, given they'd already won the group.
I think that's fair to say. And I think when you look at it, not only did Portugal want to rest a few players, and of course they had Rafael Leao suspended as well. You've got, with these bigger squads, with these 26-man squads, Rob, you've got to keep the other players involved as well. And there's so much talent in that Portugal squad. Who knows who they'll need for injuries and suspensions as the tournament unfolds. But remarkable, really, when we consider that this is the first time in his senior international career that Cristiano Ronaldo has gone through the group stage of either a FIFA World Cup or a UEFA Euro without scoring. I mean, that to me probably says he's got something big planned for the knockout stages, but we'll wait and see.
Absolutely. Chris, we've got the fixtures then. The round of 16 has taken shape. The teams that Portugal and Georgia will play in the next round.
Portugal will play Slovenia on Monday. That will be a 9 p.m. local time kickoff. And Georgia will play Spain on Sunday at a 9 p.m. local time kickoff. What an occasion that's going to be. Well, both games, actually, going to be brilliant.
It's going to be very special. OK, let's go to the other game in Group F, which took place between Czechia and Turkey in Hamburg.
Well, Stanek has had some difficulties at the championship, but he's been beaten now. Hakan Çalhanoğlu. Well, it's been dropped by the goalkeeper. It's been cleared off the goal line. Czechia level. A captain's goal from Tomáš Souček. They're not out of it yet. Brilliant finish. Cenk Tosun. Listen to the noise. And listen to the reception for Cenk Tosun.
Yes, that late goal just sealed it for Turkey. And even before a goal went in this game, Czechia were down to 10 men after an early red card for Barak. And it was always going to make life difficult for them, Andy. But they did fight Czechia on the night.
They really did. And as you say, after Antonin Barak went off, it was very, very tough for them. And especially after Turkey took the lead, you thought, OK, this is only going in one direction, especially, as we said, with that atmosphere propelling them on. But really, it's a remarkable performance from them to keep it alive right until the end, right until stoppage time. But I think when they look back at it, Czechia will regret the second half of that game against Georgia, where they put on a lot of pressure and they weren't able to break through. So I think even though they're a team that conceded stoppage time winners in two games, it's the other one that will really give them cause for what might have been.
And it's the first time Turkey have gone through to the knockout stages of a Euro since 2008 when they reached the semi-finals.
Incredible, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Talk to us about the job that Vincenzo Montella has done there.
A really great job because, of course, he took over midway through the qualifying campaign, Chris, from Stefan Kuntz. And it's super difficult. You know, you're managing expectation. You're starting from a negative position in the group as well. But what Vincenzo Montella has that a lot of other candidates wouldn't have had is a really thorough understanding of the Turkish club game. Of course, Adana Demirspor, the coach before, where he managed players including Mario Balotelli. And he's someone who, despite being an overseas coach, is someone with an intimate knowledge of the Turkish game. And, you know, like, say, Sven-Göran Eriksson in the past when he was England coach, you always see Montella at the Turkish Super League games. And that sort of respect and the respect that conveys really matters. So here's someone who understands the players, who understands the culture, who has a great knowledge of the players as well. And that's enabled him to turn things around very quickly. And what as well he's done from an outsider's perspective is he's dampened some of the overreaction that sometimes you get. And this happens with a lot of national teams, of course, to a loss. So I saw them in the middle game of the group when I was out in Germany lose 3-0 to Portugal. But he managed to de-dramatise it and move on to the next one. And I think he's managed his squad very, very well in terms of his picks too.
Czechia came into this game knowing they had to win, and they went into the game without their top striker, Patrick Schick, injured on the bench. It looked like he didn't even warm up in the end, really, the Bayer Leverkusen man. And from Turkey's point of view, Chris, a massive boost to have Arda Güler back in, and then Hakan Çalhanoğlu in this more advanced role really worked too. And his goal was one of those, if you watch football regularly, one of those mega satisfying kind of goals you see in football sometimes.
Yeah, where within the same phase of play, you get about three, go on!
Or yeah, four shots.
Which are blocked, and it just ramps up and up and up, and it means that when the ball finally hits the back of the net, via a classic Çalhanoğlu thunderbolt of a finish,
yeah,
somehow that moment of relief and joy is even bigger than normal. And I think it's an interesting point. You mentioned Güler and Çalhanoğlu, how Turkey, Andy, have got this blend of very experienced players with lots of caps and also young, prodigious talents who are, you know, revered already back at home in particular, but how they've managed to kind of marry up and play together so well so far.
Yeah, it's very impressive. And of course, Turkey is one of those nations where is not just the domestic players that we were talking about under Montella. You've got a series of players who've grown up in different environments. So you look at Çalhanoğlu, who's come through the German system, Kenan Yıldız, born in Germany, now at Juventus. And so I think there has to be a particular skill in bringing together those slightly different cultural reference points and creating one common reference point for all of those players from those slightly different backgrounds, although all with the same aim, of course. And it does add a sort of cosmopolitan tinge as well to the team. And I think you look at, as you say, how different Çalhanoğlu is to the players around him. And it took him a while to get used to playing for the Turkish national team. But now you look at him, he's the captain, he's the leader, he's the guy they all look to. And I think because he's someone who has done all of his senior career outside of Turkey, he's someone who can understand both the domestic based players and the ones that have grown up in other environments and be a touchstone for them. And of course, he's at the absolute peak of his club form at the moment. And you could really see it, guys, as you said, from the way he hit that shot. I mean, that was a golf drive, basically, wasn't it? I don't know if it was a football shot.
Okay, so the group finished like this in the end. Portugal top with 6 points. Turkey second with 6 points. Georgia getting 4 points. And Czechia finishing bottom of the group with 1 point. Chris, who did Turkey play in the next round?
I'm going to whet the appetite because I think this might be the tie of the round.
Ooh.
Austria.
Oh.
In Leipzig. We've seen how Austria play and how thrilling their games have been. Turkey are the same. I can't wait for that already. It's Tuesday, by the way. Tuesday, 9 p.m. local time in Leipzig.
And we'll be live after that game as well on the Euro Show. Coming up, we're going to reflect on the conclusion of Group E, plus we'll look ahead to the first round of 16 matches.
Few major competitions do more than the Euros to ensure their benefits last far beyond the final tournament. Since 2004, our hat-trick programme has been distributing two-thirds of every Euro's net revenue across Europe's 55 football associations to fund development projects. These benefits touch every level of the football pyramid. In communities, it pays for mini-pitches, grassroots club development, football in schools and disability football projects. At the top, hat-trick has helped associations build more than 60 stadiums and training centres. Euro 2024 will build on more than 800 projects already delivered over 20 years of hat-trick. Over the next 4 years, 935 million euros of the tournament's revenue will help leave a lasting legacy across the continent.
A reminder to download the official Euro 2024 app if you haven't already. Our in-camp team reporters are providing you with the team news perhaps you need for your fantasy football team. You're going to have to make your changes as well before the round of 16 with many, you know, eight teams now having been eliminated. To Group E next, where all four teams, remember, were level on 3 points heading into the final match day. In a moment, we're going to speak about Ukraine and Belgium. But first to Frankfurt, Slovakia against Romania.
And swung in by Krucsika. It's 1-0! Duda met it! And once more Slovakia in the groove in Frankfurt. Harin scores it! And scores it brilliantly! The Romanian roar loud. Dubravka did not have a chance.
Chris Wise on commentary there as it finished. Slovakia 1, Romania 1. A great night for both nations. As both went through, let's start by looking at this from a Romania perspective, Andy. It is a major moment in their sporting history.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And when we think about how in the 80s and the 90s, Romania really were regular qualifiers for FIFA World Cups and UEFA Euros. And that sort of changed when we got into the 21st century. They found it a lot more difficult to qualify for major tournaments, having been a quarter finalist at UEFA Euro 2000. And when you think about a country that built its self-image going back to the 1970 World Cup, the precursor of tiki-taka, really, under Angel Iordanescu, and then was known for players like George Hagi, Georgie Popescu, you know, just a series of amazing players. Now you have that Hagi lineage in the current team as well. And it is a family affair. Eduard Iordanescu, he's the son of Angel, is the coach of Romania. You've had both father and son of the Lucescus as well. So it's always a family affair in Romanian football. And for them to get there with, I think most Romanian people would agree, not the most incredible generation of players that they've ever had, but players who are committed, a very talented captain in Nicolae Stanciu, and also, I think you look in Denis Manna, another player who's had the season of his life, getting Parma promoted back to Serie A. So for them to get through to a knockout stage of a competition, a major finals competition for the first time in 24 years, is a sense of enormous pride. And I think really the confidence and the swagger they showed in that first game against Ukraine has just set the tone.
Those names from the past, Andy. It's all nostalgia, to be honest. I just had a quick look to remind myself how Romania beat Argentina in front of 90,000 with some of those names and then lost in the quarterfinals. And actually, after going through today, Yanis Hagi was speaking about following in his father's footsteps.
Whenever I have the biggest responsibility and pressure on my shoulders, I think that's when the best version of Yanis comes out. It's a dream come true to be here. I've always dreamed of, especially coming from a family which my father, obviously, he achieved so many big stuff at this level of football. So following his footsteps, it's unbelievable.
Yanis Hagi there. I think after going through, you can refer to yourself in the third person.
Absolutely right.
Actually, you could almost hear that confidence and swagger, which Andy was talking about, which was so vital to them going through.
Well, let's get more from our Romania reporter now. Cristina Tachia joins us. Cristina, thanks for coming on the show.
Good evening, all. In fact, yeah, it is a good evening.
What a night for Romanian football. Tell us about the atmosphere since Romania qualified for the round of 16.
Yeah, it was a great atmosphere on the stadium with all the fans chanting and singing the national anthem and supporting them. It was incredible. It was also a tough match, as you could see, because of the match, of course, and the two teams playing, but also because of the weather conditions. So it was like, I don't know, a twilight zone inside there. But at the end, everybody's happy, and I think they accomplished what they came here for, and passing the groups, and not anyway, but on the first ranking first. So it's a happy evening for Romania.
Talk to us about the outpouring of emotion when that full-time whistle went. What did it mean to the players, I guess to you as well, and all those supporters inside the stadium?
In fact, I was near them because I was waiting for my colleagues to tell us if the player of the match is going to be from Romania or Slovakia. And I could feel that feeling like behind the Romanian's bench when the final whistle went and everybody went on the pitch and they were congratulating and jumping and saying, "We done it, we done it, we done it." It was like a huge emotion. I could see happiness, and I don't know, maybe some of them were crying or stuff like that because they're all hugging. It was like, it's a historical event for the Romanian national team and also for the Romanian fans. It is a nice feeling, a great one.
And you've been speaking to the head coach, Eduard Iordanescu. What's he been saying?
He's very proud. His first words were actually for the fans. He wanted to thank them for the atmosphere that they created on the stadium and for their support. And after that, he told me that he's very proud of his squad and that he knows what they have been doing for 2 years and a half and that they prepared for this. He knows that they are not perfect, but he wanted to congratulate them for their efforts. He was very happy. He was very happy and very proud.
And what's the plan now ahead of, you know, a few days off, I imagine, but ahead of this round of 16 tie for Romania?
I think that their first plan is to celebrate.
Quite right.
Because they started celebrating from the dressing room with music and everything. And after that, I think from tomorrow, they will rest and start to prepare the next stage of this tournament. Because I also talked with some players today at flash interviews, and they were very aware of the fact that this passing from the groups, it is a great joy, but also great pressure on them, because they will meet like tougher teams, powerful ones. They seem very focused, and like now they're happy. But from tomorrow, they will start again preparing for what's next.
Christina, go join the party. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Have a nice evening. Thank you.
Our Romania reporter, Christina Tacchi, she's holding it and she's over the moon, really. She's right. Trying to be professional, but an extraordinary achievement. And Chris, they've got their round of 16 tie sorted.
They are heading to Munich to take on the Netherlands.
Oof,
which is going to be, I think they've been two of the most colourful sets of supporters. So it's going to be some sight in Bavaria. And very interesting as well, because these round of 16 fixtures now all set. It is Slovakia against England, and that is on Sunday.
Okay, so let's talk about Slovakia. Andy Brassel, Stanislav Lobotka, brilliant in midfield again. The little stocky midfielder dictating play. He was player of the match. But what have you made of this whole campaign for them to reach the knockouts?
It's been really impressive. And again, something that was really founded on defensive grit in that first game against Belgium. And I think for Slovakia to come out of that with not just something, but a win, really showed that they were serious in that tournament. I mean, you talked about Lobotka, but you think of Andrej Duda, who scored the goal and became the first Slovak to score in two European championships today. They've got Kučka in there as well. And I think that midfield has been the underrated part, really, of their team, and something that's given them great stability throughout this tournament, and which will make it tough for England, because that is an area in which England have lacked their normal balance as well.
With Marek Hamšík, of course, guiding from the touchline as well. And that goal was wonderful, wasn't it? That delivery, that header for Andrej Duda's goal as Slovakia drew the game. With the other game being level and staying level to full time, Ukraine were in a position where they knew they had to win to qualify. And they did chuck on attacking players into the final 20 minutes. But they couldn't find a way through Belgium, who finished second thanks to that goalless draw.
This was on a, you know, it really was on a knife edge, because had Ukraine have scored, Belgium would have been going home and Ukraine would have gone through. Both teams knew that. There was tension in the stadium, but there were chances as well. And you do have to feel a little bit for Ukraine. 4 points. No one has ever not gone through with 4 points. Since the expansion with these best third place teams. But Ukraine, unfortunately for them, you know, often say in tournaments that you need lots of skill, you also need a slice of luck along the way. Well, they haven't got that. And of course, Slovenia have gone through as one of the best third place teams with 3 points, but Ukraine finished bottom of the section with four.
They're players in tears at full time, Andy. And in reality, it's extraordinary that they even found themselves in this position.
Yeah, I mean, we know the reasons for why this means much more than football to them. But as well as we've talked about throughout on the UEFA Euro show, it's an incredibly talented generation. So they will have expected more of themselves as well. I agree with Chris's point about fortune. And sometimes that fortune can come down to the falling of the fixtures. Because after losing that first game so comprehensively to Romania, a game in which they actually started pretty well until they conceded the first goal, and they were good in the first half hour, I thought. They gave themselves a mountain to climb, and if the fixtures had fallen in a different sequence, the problem is they left themselves in a position where they had to beat Belgium on the final day, which, you know, you can sort of write off a game almost when you lose to the best team in the group, or the best team in the group on paper in that first game. But not only were they playing catch up, they knew they had that down the line as well. And I thought they played the game very smartly today. So they defended well, they kept their shape, and as Chris said, they tried to step it up as the game went on, and they just didn't get that rub in the end.
They had their chances, didn't they, into the closing stages. Let's get some reaction from the opposition, the Belgian camp. Wout Faas, the central defender, has reflected on the challenges of playing at a Euro.
It's a very good team of Ukraine. They had a very good game. They're very good players. So at the end, I think it was a difficult group. I think if you come here in the Euros, you don't have easy games. I think that's what we saw with the other groups as well. After all, the most important is that we qualified.
They have still yet to really find their rhythm. Kevin De Bruyne, player of the match, Lukaku with chances, but we're yet to see the best of Belgium. But they're through, and that's the key thing, Chris.
Yeah, and I think if you look at some of the other pre-tournament favourites, their coaches, you look at France, England, Belgium, I think they will all know that when the round of 16 comes around, the tournament almost starts again, and it's knockout stage football then. And we've seen flashes in particular from them. And ultimately, they got the point, which was enough. And their fixture in the round of 16 on Monday. How about this? France against Belgium in Dusseldorf.
That's pretty good. OK, more to come. We've got big games to preview in the round of 16. But first, here are your day 13 Euro headlines. The English FA have confirmed that Phil Foden has temporarily left the England camp for a pressing family matter. The Three Lions are next in action on Sunday, having won their group.
Whilst Hungary were awaiting their Euro fate, there was good news for striker Barnabas Varga. He was released from hospital in Stuttgart this morning after his successful operation on the facial injury which he suffered against Scotland. Varga is now recovering at home in Hungary.
Meanwhile, there's been no rest for the Netherlands. They started their preparations for the last 16 with a 6-1 victory over a fourth-tier German side, Havelse, today. Chris, who got the goals?
Val Veghorst and Mickey van der Ven both scored twice. Brian Brobby and Jeremy Frimpong got one, but so did Marco Illich for Havelse. And how about this? He was interviewed on Dutch TV after, the amateur footballer. He said it was unbelievable and then very nonchalantly explained how he outpaced the defender and scored.
Andy Brassel with us on the Euro show tonight with me, Rob Daly and Chris Parrott. Andy, you've just got back from Germany, where you really have been. I mean, I've been looking at the cities you've been visiting. You really pinged around. You made quick work of it. What have you been up to?
I did. I went to games in Leipzig, Dortmund, Frankfurt and Leipzig again. So I got to see Netherlands, France, Turkey, Portugal, the host Germany against Switzerland. And then that thrilling game between Croatia and Italy. And I have to say that not only were the games excellent, but the atmospheres were pretty special. And I think people have been waiting for a long time, fellas, for this UEFA Euro, because of course the last one 3 years ago was restricted in the amount of fans it could welcome because of COVID across the various countries.
Yeah.
And that was unfortunate. So it feels that this one, it's just a big party amongst so many fans who at last can travel in numbers to these big welcoming stadiums. You can see it in the spirit that it's celebrated not just in the stadiums but in the fan zones as well. I was lucky enough to walk to the Netherlands France game with the Dutch fans in their fan procession. There were these double-decker buses blaring out their favorite Dutch party hits, and followed by what was probably about 20,000 fans. It's just been remarkable.
Well, this is Andy getting amongst it with the Dutch supporters, an honorary member of the Oranje.
And I can't believe you were in this, Andy, because I've been saying to anyone that's wanted to listen on the Euro show and also friends, I would love to be in that Dutch party when they jig from right to left, left to right, and then they hit that.
Did you dance? Did you dance?
He danced, surely.
I did, but I looked a bit daft because I wasn't wearing orange. and trust me, everyone is wearing orange.
Yeah, there was an intruder in the camp. Well, look, they're into the round of 16, so we'll get to see that colour throughout the rest of the tournament. Let's start by looking ahead to the round of 16. And we have our confirmed sides, of course, Chris, tonight in the knockout stage.
Yeah, we do. And it is quite a lineup, isn't it? We have, first of all, Switzerland, Italy, Germany, Denmark, England, Slovakia, Spain, Georgia, France, Belgium, Portugal, Slovenia, Romania, the Netherlands, and Austria and Turkey.
Yeah, pretty good. Andy, which team has impressed you most, first of all?
I think it has to be Austria so far. I know Chris pointed them out earlier in the show, and I think that's absolutely right. I think so many of the favourites who we would consider the favourites before this competition have struggled to find their best rhythm. But with Austria, you've got exactly the team that turned up and impressed in qualifying. The way they've pressed, the energy they've shown, the bravery they've shown in all of these games has been outstanding. And that really will be one of the great last 16 ties between them and Turquía, who, of course, are boosted by that incredible support that they've got.
And who's your surprise, Andy? There's been a few, hasn't there?
I think there have. I mean, I didn't see Georgia emerging from the group at all. So again, they've played with bravery, and I think this is a theme, really. Best foot forward, he who dares wins, and all that sort of stuff. Mm. And you know, that they've been terrific so far. But I think if you look at that group with Italy, with Spain, with Croatia, with Albania, I think it shows what incredible quality there has been throughout this Euro so far, in the fact that Albania were really good and they finished in final position.
Yeah.
You talked about Ukraine today becoming the first side to get 4 points and not move on to the next round in this incarnation of the UEFA Euro format since 2016. So it shows there's been some great depth here.
Okay, well, let's start with Saturday's games. And remember, there's a two-day break now until the football comes back. We're going to look at Germany against Denmark shortly. But first up, in Berlin, it's Switzerland against Italy. And let's get more on Italy now with our UEFA reporter with the team, Paolo Minacucci. Paolo, thanks for coming on.
Hello, everybody.
What did that late equaliser against Croatia do for the squad's confidence in the past few days?
Yeah, I think I was watching the faces after the game against Spain, and they were a mix of focus, but even a bit down. The more I was the players were like really shocked by the performance, because they were expecting a tough game against Spain, but probably nobody could expect to be dominated so much by Spain. I think they reacted to that defeat against Spain. They were well organized in the first half. They had 5 minutes in the second half after that goal that were a bit... probably they saw the ghost of elimination, and they were like, this team is not really experienced, so they didn't manage to react immediately. But then they had a nice reaction in the final minutes, and I think they deserved the draw. I think the performance was enough for earning a draw. And now everything's changed. You can, for example, today, usually the training here in Iselon are close to the people. There are always... like a lot of fans, Italy fans at the gates that would like to come in screaming, but the training are always closed. Today, Spalletti opened the whole training to everyone. So there were 300-400 Italian fans on the stands watching, screaming. The atmosphere was completely different compared to the atmosphere in the days following the defeat against Spain. Even for the media, usually today should have been open for 15 minutes. Spalletti decided to open it for the entire session. So it was everything a bit more relaxed, everything a bit more happy mood.
Sounds excellent, Paolo, from an Italian point of view. Riccardo Calafiori, of course, suspended for this game against Switzerland. How do you think Luciano Spalletti is going to change things up?
First of all, it's a very bad blow. And I told you already that I should not reveal which my favorite team is Bologna, and Calafiori is a Bologna player. But anyway, just to give you an idea of the importance of this player for Italy, I received these stats in the game against Croatia. Tell me the percentage of aerial duels he won, guess.
Okay, I'm going to go 100%, actually.
95%.
100.
Oh, I got it right, yes.
I like this, Paolo. Any more, please?
Tell me the percentage of tackles he won in that game.
I'll go 80%.
90%.
100.
There's a theme here.
Tell me how many times he was dribbled past by a Croatian player.
Zero.
Yeah, it's got to be 0%. Zero.
Wow,
times.
Great. Zero, yeah.
Look, this is a big loss. And I think many people, Paolo, coming into this tournament, wouldn't necessarily, in Europe, away from Italy, would have heard of Calafiori.
No, it's true. It's he had this breakout season last season with Bologna, and if you watch Serie A for the entire season, you knew that because he was one of the best defender in the league for sure. But he made his debut last month in Serie A, like the national team. I mean, he was playing just with the under 21 until April. And so it's a surprise for everyone, and nobody could predict that he would start here. And then now he's almost he's one of the best players alongside Donnarumma, who has been amazing so far. And so it will be a big loss for the round of 16 against Switzerland for sure. I think that Spalletti will replace him with Mancini, the Roma defender. Probably confirming the three men defending with Mancini in the center, Bastoni in the right, and Bastoni on the left, and Darmian on the right. That's probably the solution he will go for without Colafiore. But we'll certainly miss like his runs, his energy, his attacking way of defending. They will be missed for sure.
I saw Muric Jakin, the Swiss head coach, talking about the tactical versatility of Italy, because we've now seen the four at the back and the three at the back. And there was maybe a question about what's the best system. But do you see this as a plus now for Italy, that they can switch things up?
I was talking today. I had an interview with Mancini, and the defender that probably will replace Calafiori. And he told me exactly that. You are focusing on numbers, but that's not relevant in modern football. This is just how you start games, numbers, systems, and just how you start. Then a winning team is the one that managed to adapt during the game, changing the system and changing to create problems to the opponents, to control better the opponents. But it's all changing during a game. Even against Croatia, for example, they switch from a back three to a back four during the game. They changed the way they were playing midfield several times. And I think he's right. I think what Mancini said was right. In modern football, these systems are not so important as they were in the past.
Okay, Paolo, the killer question to end. What is the score going to be in this round of 16 clash?
Oh, that's difficult. And first of all, I would say that Switzerland have three Bologna players, while Freuler, Abischer, and Doje. But I will not be influenced by my club passion. But my prediction is a 2-1 victory for Italy that will go to the quarterfinals.
Great insight from our Italy reporter, and maybe a Bologna fan, maybe. Paolo Minicucci. Paolo, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Bye.
Great stuff from Paolo, as always. Andy Brassel, Switzerland, how good are they?
Well, I had a first-hand look at them on Sunday against Germany. And when you look at the increasing optimism around the Germany team and the atmosphere, which is something special, that Switzerland were able to come into that and spend large parts of the game controlling it, I thought was very impressive. Now, I think people who maybe didn't watch this or watched a little bit of it will look at the numbers and say, well, hang on. Germany had 2/3 of possession. They had 5 times as many shots. But Jan Sommer wasn't busy, I'll tell you that. And the way they controlled the game, Switzerland, particularly after going a goal up through Dan and Doy, who one of those Bologna players who's really, really growing into this tournament, I think, has been really impressive. Now, if you look at the changes that Switzerland made in what was a really tough qualifying campaign, so Murat Yakin, the coach, got a bit of help with Giorgio Contini, who's very, very experienced in the Swiss Super League. And it's made a massive difference. They look really organised. They've got two key players in Granit Xhaka, who's been man of the match in two of those games, and Manuel Akanji, who are in a great moment of form. I did wonder how they would score goals at the start of the tournament, but it's been less of a problem for them than it has been for the team that's got Kylian Mbappe. So I think they're a really, really tough nut to crack, as they always are in the Euro.
Italy take on Switzerland in Berlin on Saturday. Still to come, we'll look at the other round of 16 tie that day.
UEFA Euro 2024 is setting the pace for sustainability in sports. This summer, matches have been organised in regional clusters, reducing team flights by around 75% compared to Euro 2016. This also means fans can enjoy a smoother, eco-friendly journey between games, helping to ensure sustainability is at the heart of the tournament.
And a reminder, download the UEFA Euro 2024 app for everything you need for the tournament, including listening to this live show at full time on the final game of every day.
Yes, so to the late match on Saturday in the round of 16, it is Germany against Denmark, a repeat of the 1992 final.
This is Vilfort! Oh, it's in! It is in! And it's Kim Vilfort! Denmark's dream has become reality. A quite astonishing achievement. The rank outsiders who didn't even qualify have become the champions of Europe, undisputed.
Still can barely believe it all these years on, Andy. And we can't talk about this game without mentioning 1992. We heard the commentary there. I guess Greece maybe matched it in 2004, but still that win for Denmark, one of the great sporting upsets, I guess.
Really was, of course. They didn't qualify for the tournament at first. They were on the beach, quite literally, when Yugoslavia had to pull out and Denmark replaced them. So to go on and win the tournament, to knock off, firstly Netherlands in the semis and then Germany in the final was absolutely remarkable. John Jensen, of course, getting the opening goal before that Kim Vilfort goal in the final when he never scored. It was remarkable, really. And when we look at the arcs, and we talked about the history of Romania before and Romanian football, you know, we think of peak Denmark as being 1986. Danish Dynamite, Michael Laudrup and all that. And of course, they were unseated in Mexico by Spain and more specifically, Emilio Butragueño. And I think people were expecting a dip after that. And it was a dip in terms of raw talent. So for them to come into that tournament and knock out a couple of the favourites and win it was just maybe the greatest Euro story.
I interviewed Peter Schmeichel once. And he was talking about how he, like many of the other players, were on holidays on the beach and how in the first game they had to wear their under-21 shirts because there wasn't time to get the kit ready because it was such a late inclusion. And then they went all the way and won it.
Oh, very good. OK, well, let's speak to our Germany reporter now. Philipp Röber joins us now. Philipp, thanks for coming on.
Hey, guys. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, great to get your company. We're going to get into what's been happening at the Germany camp next. But first, your memories of Euro 92 and how much has this been a focus, that final ahead of this match between Germany and Denmark?
Oh, my memories of 92. Well, I suffered maybe a little bit more than the average German because I lived in Flensburg at the time, which is the border to Denmark. And there's quite a heavy Danish population.
Right.
There. So, yeah, I got to experience that defeat quite often in the days after the final actually happened. But obviously that was a match that Germany expected to win. And I think it's still considered one of the biggest upsets that they've ever had to suffer through. And I'm sure it will resurface quite a fair bit over the next few days. But obviously it is a long time ago.
Moving on to Euro 2024, what have Germany been up to since their last group game?
They have apparently had a little bit of a mosquito plague, as coach Julian Nagelsmann said. So I don't know if they really got to use their pool that often. And apparently they had to watch most of their games indoor. But yeah, obviously there is a little bit of an injury scare there that Antonio Rüdiger might not be fit because of a thigh injury. Which would then be a bit of a problem because they already have to replace Jonathan Tah. But otherwise, today we had Rudi Völler at the press conference, and he spoke quite with a lot of optimism regarding the match against Denmark.
Yeah, we'll ask you about the Tah and Rudi situation in a second. But on Rudi Völler's role, can you explain his role within the German national team setup?
Well, he was asked about this today, actually. He is the sporting director, so he's obviously had many different roles. He used to be the national coach at the World Cup in 2002, was very successful there, and obviously he was a player and a world champion. Now he's the sporting director, and he, when asked today, he said, well, he was there when there are major crises, when there is a major crisis, then he's, you know, there to protect the team. And luckily he said, when he was smiling when he said that, there hasn't been one yet. So yeah, he's been able to just pass on, I think, his knowledge, his wisdom, you know, he's very experienced, he's seen it all, and he's a guy that you can always talk to. So I think players are enjoying his company there. He's embedded with the team. And yeah, he's just making sure that everything's going smoothly.
And on Rudiger and Tah, if either or both, well, we know Tah's not going to be there. If Rudiger wasn't as well, what are the options that Julian Nagelsmann has at the heart of his defence?
He's got three more centre-backs available. The first option, I think, is Nico Schlotterbeck, who's a Champions League finalist with Dortmund, and he came on for Tah in the last game. So I think we'll see him for sure. And then, yeah, there's also Waldemar Anton and Robin Koch, two central defenders who haven't got the most experience, especially at this level. And, you know, they are also not super experienced in terms of like Champions League football, but still they were, you know, selected to play for Germany. There were other good central defenders who could have made the squad, but Nagelsmann opted for them. He's assigned every single player a role and has full faith in them. And yeah, if it happens that they'll need to replace two, not ideal at all, of course, but they will still have a decent defense.
Subs had to come to the rescue in that draw with Switzerland to secure top spot for Germany. So what has been the mood like since that game, and the mood for the hosts amongst those supporters going to this round of 16 tie?
Well, they were thinking that this was probably the best possible you know, test they could have for the knockouts, you know, going into later stages of a game and the trailing. And then, you know, managing to get the result they were hoping for, to keep them first in the group and to keep euphoria in the country high, which is massive. So I think, yeah, that was actually as probably as good as it could have gone for them, given that Switzerland had some counterattacking chances to make it 2-0. And overall, you know, the mood in Germany seems to be constantly on the rise, and that the people here, the football fans, they have more belief than ever that this German team could win it and could, you know, stay in the tournament for a long time. I think the team going into the Denmark match, they will know that it's going to be a similar opponent to the three that they've already played. They will, you know, Denmark is not going to really take the initiative too much, but they will rather react and you know, maybe go for counterattacks against Germany. So yeah, it's going to be another tough test, but I think they're up for it.
Philip, enjoy the game in Dortmund, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. All the best to you guys.
Our Germany reporter Philip Rober speaking there. They take on a Denmark side yet to win a game at this Euro. They've drawn all three of their group games. Andy Brassel, can they beat the hosts?
I think they can. I'm not convinced whether they will. But what we have seen from Denmark is, I think, at least a rigidity to them. So I think maybe they will take a bit of inspiration from what Switzerland did in Frankfurt, and that could make it a tight tie.
Denmark's Joachim Mähler says his team have to be ready to face the host Germany.
Yeah, we need to prepare good, of course, and yeah, Germany, they are a good team, we know the qualities, they play at home, but to win the tournament you need to beat everybody, so if they are coming now and the semi-final, quarter-final, doesn't matter, you need to beat them.
Okay, so that's one of the round of 16 ties, Germany against Denmark. Chris, let's run through them all for people perhaps joining us a little bit later.
Yeah, and one of these teams that I'm just about to say will win UEFA Euro 2024. So on Saturday, the 29th of June, this Saturday, of course, it is Switzerland against Italy, and then the aforementioned tie between Germany and Denmark. On Sunday, England face Slovakia, and it's Spain, Georgia. On Monday, France, Belgium, and Portugal against Slovenia. And then on Tuesday, Romania face the Netherlands and Austria take on Turkey. So four consecutive days, two matches per day, and then we'll know the quarterfinalists.
Yes, yeah, so we'll be live on air every night after those games have concluded. Here's a reminder of how things finished on Wednesday. Slovakia 1, Romania 1, Ukraine 0, Belgium 0, Czechia 1, Turkey 1, and Georgia 2, Portugal 0. Some victory. Let's hear from one of their goal scorers. Krzysztof Faraskelia was far more interested in his country's historic win than his Player of the Match trophy.
I'm very happy today, because we did it. It was really hard because Portugal is the amazing team, but I told everyone that we can win and we are the top team. We can fight against everyone. I'm so proud. I don't care about this trophy, but thanks to give me this trophy, but I'm so happy about win and I'm so happy.
Faraskelia speaking there. Lots of people getting in touch on X, including FJ. Say, great game and determination by Georgia. Surely they upset the Giants and hot favourites of the tournament in the process. Praise to them for a tremendous performance. And their other goal scorer on the night, Chris, has made a little bit of history.
Yeah, he's the top scorer. We mentioned him, Georgios Mikutadze. How about this? He's the ninth player to score in all three group matches of a Euro. And these are the legendary players that he joins. Platini from 84, Shearer and Stoichkov from 96, Milosevic from 2000, Baroš from 2004, Van Nistelrooy from 2004, Bale in 2016 and Ronaldo in 2021. That is a who's list of the greatest European goal scorers ever.
A trivia question for the future. Okay, we're almost at the end of the show now. Thanks to everyone who's been getting in touch. But Andy Brassel, look, we wanted to finish with talking about our highlights in the group stage. So we'll come to yours in a minute. Chris, do you want to go first with yours?
Can I change the question and go for kind of a theme? Am I allowed to do that this late on? I'm going to do it. Late goals, I think, for me. There have been so many. We had one on the opening night. We had nine goals after the 90-minute mark. And I think of all of them, Kevin Soboth's goal in the 100th minute, which was the latest. It gave Hungary a chance. They didn't ultimately go through because of results this evening. But what a moment this was.
Now, Soloi for Hungary. This could be their last chance. Szoboszlai stretches. It's in! Kevin Soboth!
So that was one of the late goals we've seen. And Andy has also picked another memorable moment, which came very late on.
Calafiori, Fratesi, Calafiori rampaging here. Zaccagni! Salvation! The Azzurri reach for the skies!
And Andy Brassel, you were there to see it in person.
I was, and it was funny because Croatia had put in such an incredible effort. I was getting ready to go to the mix zone, the bit where you speak to all the players after they leave the dressing rooms. And I wanted to get a bit of a head start because I knew it would be busy. So just as the stoppage time was ticking down, I ran up the stairs to the top of the stand, to the exit, to avoid the crowds, and watch the last minute or so there. So I got to see Zaccagni's goal right from the top, and also the widescreen as about four Croatia players dropped to their knees. It was an amazing sight.
It certainly was. Rob, for you, moment of the group stage?
I've gone for this one.
Trying to find some trickery and picking out the pass as well. They've equalised! Yasula!
Yeah, so I've actually gone for another late goal against Croatia, sadly for them. But it was a brilliant moment for Albania. And in particular, Klaus Jasula, 14 minutes from time, had come on to try and shore up midfield, scored an own goal. Then sure enough, as they were about to lose, 95th minute, he went up the other end and got the equaliser. One of those brilliant, memorable stories from the group stage, despite Albania's elimination.
And there have been so many since the opener in Munich, which seems a lifetime ago. It's actually less than 2 weeks ago. This group stage has absolutely flown by, and it's been wonderful to bring all the drama on the Euro show. So thanks for listening. Remember, we are on air every match night, minutes after the final game, on the Euro 2024 app and Euro2024.com. And this show is also available as the official podcast, so please subscribe using your favourite podcast provider.
A big thanks to our special guest, Andy Brassel, as well on tonight's show. Euro 2024 now takes a break for the next couple of days, but do not worry, we'll be back on Saturday to bring your reaction to the first two knockout ties at this year's tournament, as the host Germany take on Denmark and Switzerland face Italy. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the official Euro 2024 podcast, an IMG production for UEFA.